Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Melinda Myers from Milwaukee, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener and author of many a book about gardening. And what, as I said earlier, what she doesn't know about gardening, I don't know if it's worth knowing.
Well, you just gave me a great excuse. If I get stumped, that's the line I'm using from now on for the rest of my career. Thank you, Larry.
Well, I tell you what, let me give the number. If you have a question, maybe there's an indoor plant question, or maybe you're already thinking about spraying, or maybe you're thinking about pruning outdoors. Yeah, there are lots of things that we can think about here. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments, or email us at talk@wpr.org. So what are you doing in the way of gardening right now? Indoor stuff, I assume?
Well, you bet. A lot of holiday plants. I love to give plants for gifts.
Yep.
And I always like to add a few to my indoor collection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a great time to go out and look for some maybe newer, unusual plants. You know, typically we think of Christmas, we think of poinsettias.
Yep.
And they're a wonderful plant for the holidays. But there are also lots of new ones, wonderful varieties out there on the market, different colors available. And if you want a blue one, you can get one. They will paint it blue for you, but you can get one. You know, the Christmas rose with the crinkly bracts, it looks kind of like mm-hmm. a rose. So lots of different choices. But I like to give some unusual things.
Okay, like what?
Cyclamen. Beautiful. Oh. They look like shooting stars almost, and heart-shaped leaves, variegated foliage. They bloom for a long period of time, like cooler temperatures. And here's my philosophy on gift plants. You can enjoy them and compost them when you're done if you're not a gardener, so there's no pressure. Or if you like the challenge, you can try to rebloom them, like the cyclamen. So you take care of it. As the leaves yellow and the plant declines, which is normal, you can either set it aside in a cool, dark place or repot it. That seems to stimulate growth. Get it to grow leaves, and if you're lucky, in about a year, you'll get new blooms. So that's obviously for the diehard gardeners or those of us that like a challenge or are a little geeky about plants, one of the two.
You know, Karen Johansson from Johansson's Green Houses
right.
here in Madison. She says that's their rule about gifts too. Give a gift that people can toss.
Exactly.
Once they're done with it, if they want to.
No pressure. I do cut flowers for my parents. My mother feels too much pressure, and she can't embrace that compost thing. She doesn't really like to garden, but she's like, you know, I can't throw them away, and so don't give them to me. So I do cut flowers. So she knows they're on their way out, and that's a great way, too, for a hostess, for a friend. There's been some research that shows that cut flowers can bring a smile in less than 10 seconds.
I would believe that.
So, you know, it's a great way to add some cheer and reduce some stress during the holidays.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Well, I tell you what, every one of our lines is filled.
Okay.
Should we go to the phones? Let's do that.
Yeah.
Beth and Merrill, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Beth.
I'm glad you mentioned houseplants because I have a back porch that faces west in the summer, and my plants just love it. And, of course, when it gets cold, I have to take them all inside and they're not doing so good. I only have I have one west side window and one south facing window, small window that I can try to get them all in the winter, and they just keep losing their leaves and getting brown. And do you have any tips on how I can make them last till spring?
Yeah, a couple of things, and this is such a typical Wisconsin problem. Our days are short, the light intensity's low, the humidity is low because we've got the heat on. Terrible conditions for our indoor plants. A couple things. Grouping them together is great for humidity. So when one of them transpires, you know, it's like sweating, they lose moisture from the leaves, the others benefit. I like to put all my plants on saucers with pebbles so that I set the plant on the pebbles or marbles. Saves me work because I water thoroughly. The excess collects in the saucer. As it evaporates, it increases the humidity. So that helps with humidity. Now for light, I think a lot of times we think it's either natural light or artificial light. My challenge is you might want to add some supplemental artificial light. There's wonderful fluorescent spots, grow light spots, either one works fine. And just to supplement natural daylight, you don't have to move them into an area and just use artificial. You can supplement, and sometimes that little bit extra light is just what it needs to keep them going. Adjust your care. If you keep your house cool, the light intensity's low, you water less often. If you keep your house warm and the humidity is low, plants are going to dry out faster, so you may need to water more often, and we don't think of that. So let your plants be the guide. Water thoroughly, and then feel the soil. And when the top few inches are just slightly damp, it's time to water again, unless it's a cacti, one of the succulents that likes to go a bit drier. The other thing is I found, and you probably have too, that they just struggle through the winter, but as soon as you can get them back on that back porch, it's amazing
how they
recover.
Okay.
And then and one last thing, don't fertilize unless the plants are actively growing.
Okay.
Good
thanks,
luck.
Thanks, Beth. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Let us go to John in Germantown next. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. question on crab apple.
Okay.
I trimmed all the suckers off this spring, mid-spring, so that we would get nice blossoms. And obviously by this fall, late fall, they'd grown back 12, 18 inches. Now it's pretty cold. I would imagine most of the carbohydrates got that down into the roots. Is it okay to lop off those suckers now, or should I wait till the spring?
Now, are you talking suckers from the base or the water sprouts from the side, the coming off the main branches shooting straight up?
Yeah, coming off the main branches shooting straight up.
One of the things that happens with pruning, and I think that, and I'm glad you brought this question up, is as you prune, not only do you remove growth, you encourage or stimulate growth. So the harder you prune your crabapple, the more water sprouts, the more growth you're going to get back. So a couple things. Research has shown that pruning, believe it or not, early August, like right at the beginning of August, if removing your water sprouts, then you reduce the amount that come back. And then secondly, if you don't take them all off at once, so take, say, maybe a third off this year, and then a third next year, and a third next year, you're going to have less regrowth. You can prune this time of year. I'm a big fan of pruning late winter when I do most of my pruning. One is all the damage hopefully is done. You know, who knows how much snow and ice we have ahead of us. I'm really low input, so I like to do at once. The plants are going to start growing soon, so those wounds close quicker and you have less disease problems. So yeah, you could get out there and prune now if you have time. That's one of the issues, but you might want to wait a little longer and then do it, you know, be a little sparing in your pruning. Just take a few of them out either this spring or early August, and then repeat for the next few years. And in time, just a little bit of pruning is all that won't be needed.
Now, would you say January or February?
Or March.
Or
maybe.
Even March? Yeah.
Before growth begins. So depending, when I used to teach trees and shrubs, I remember using a winter ID key in early May one year because things weren't leafing out yet. Yeah. It was so cold. So yeah, start like February. Usually we've hopefully through the worst of the weather, maybe even into March before growth begins.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
yeah,
good
thanks,
luck. You can
John.
Postpone that job.
Yeah, do something else fun. Rose and Neshota, your turn. Hi, Rose.
Hi. I have a question also about pruning. My daughter gave me a beautiful rose bush when she was in college, and it was just, you know, in a sack cut off. And it's bloomed every year beautiful. Now I'm starting to get more woody as opposed to green.
Yeah,
and I don't know really if I'm doing the right pruning. Also, I do it in the spring.
Okay, and that's the
is that
best.
Wrong?
No,
and
that's
how
right.
How far do I do it?
Do you know if it's a hybrid tea? Does it have roses like the florist, or is it more of a shrub rose where a little?
It was a hybrid, a climber sort of.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a climber. Okay, I'm glad you mentioned
spent
that.
A lot of money on it when she was in college.
what a wonderful daughter.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I know. I have to stick up for daughters. We all have mothers, and we're all, and I'm a mom too, so I know my daughter's got stories to tell. But with climbers, I'm glad you mentioned that. Here's the thing is, spring is a good time to prune. With climbers, some climbers bloom only on old wood, but most of them produce most of their growth off of older wood, meaning that the side branches and things. So when we want to prune is in spring, before growth begins, take older stems right back to the ground, maybe one or two, or any dead cane. So start with what's dead or damaged from winter and take it as close to the ground as you can get it. And then if you have still a couple more old fat canes, you can take those back to the ground. And then you're going to do this each spring. So eventually you're going to have nice, young, healthy canes coming from the base of the plant. If you've got winter dieback on the tips, take that off. Then after the first flush of blooms, then you can do some shaping. But really what you're going to want to do is take some of the older stems right back to ground level. Same thing goes with shrub roses. Now, hybrid teas, on the other hand, are ones we prune back. Usually winter does it
right.
for us. But we
yeah.
can prune those back to about 24 inches and take old wood out. But in your case, with a climber, you only want to take a few older stems back to the ground, remove any winter kill, and then after the first flush of blooms, do a little shaping as needed.
All right.
So am I hearing this right? I just want to, if I take the dead stock, the dead camp down.
Right.
And you leave the newer growth.
Right. So you take those old big fat canes as close to the ground as you can prune them. Yeah, good. And I'd rather you ask again because it's really clear in my head, but it may not have come out that way. So thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck with that.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Let's go to Sally in Madison next. Hi, Sally.
Hi. I have a question about a daylily, a small little shoot that I picked off of the stem, and it's rooting, and it's got a lot of roots in the in water. And I'm wondering if I should keep it in water over winter and keep the roots growing, or should I dry it out and then plant it in the spring?
You know, one of the challenges of keeping perennials indoors, and I understand why yours is indoors because you took one of those, and they form these little shoots off of the flowering stems. It's kind of an interesting growth habit. I would pot it up. The roots that form in water are different than those that form in soil, and sometimes it's hard to keep them going. I would put them in a cooler location in light and water as needed.
Okay.
It's hard to get it to go dormant. Our homes aren't warm enough. It's not tough and sturdy enough because it's such a young plant.
Okay.
And so I would keep it as a house plant, but in a cool location, bright sun. You know, what you're basically trying to do is keep it alive, okay, but not actively growing.
Okay.
That trick. So it sounds like you've got a good start to it. I would use a well-drained potting mix, pot it up. If you're having good luck in water, you know, my grandma always had stuff growing in a glass and water, and she'd leave it in for years. I just find a lot of gardeners have better luck putting it in a well-drained potting mix, getting it to, you know, to root, form the roots that it needs, so that in the spring, after the danger frost has passed, you can move it outside in the garden.
Okay. And then real quickly, I've heard this before, but I forget about geraniums and keeping them over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just keep them dried out in the pots in the basement?
You know, it's really very challenging. I'm glad you brought this up because there may be some people looking at theirs right now going, are they alive or not? One of the challenges, most of us have warm basements, so it's really hard to keep them dormant. So if your basement is cool, keeping them in a cool, dark place, you know, you'll hear people that they take them out, shake the soil off the roots, put them in a brown paper bag in the corner in the basement.
Right.
Just to keep them dark. And the goal is to keep them dormant, but not let them die. And so it's very challenging. So our basements typically are too warm, so they want to grow. If we don't water them, they die off. One of the things you may want to do is occasionally, a lot of people who leave them in the pots over winter, water them about once a month or so, just to keep the roots from totally desiccating or drying out. And then when the light intensity improves and they put them in a sunny window, then you start watering them regularly. Fertilize once you get new growth. It's a challenge to keep them that way. I really prefer to take cuttings from annuals I definitely want to keep or grow them as a house plant indoors so they get sun and light, and they'll often bloom for you in a nice sunny window.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have space, you know, they're going to die for sure outside. So it's definitely a good, you know, chance to keep them alive. But just check on them throughout, and you don't want them to totally shrivel up and die.
Okay.
So, and if you don't succeed, you're in the majority.
And can you do cuttings in water over the winter?
Cuttings, or just put them in a small container. You know, grow them in a small pot. Potting mix, and then grow them in your window. And I like doing that because it doesn't take as much room. You don't bring the bugs inside, and it's a lot easier for most of us.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Thanks a lot. My method is to go to the garden center every spring and buy new ones.
And you know what? I'm with you on that. I have to tell you a funny story, Larry. I had a bunch of pots, and we're going to have a first killing frost. I put them all on the back patio, and my neighbor comes over and says, you know you can overwinter those. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. She goes, well, you know, aren't you going to do that? And I said, no. They can either die quickly by the hand of frost or slowly with me. So she packs them up, takes them home, calls me in March and goes, I get it now. They're all dead. I went on vacation, forgot to water them. And she goes, I understand your method.
It's a good method.
It is.
Keeps the garden centers in business too when we want them. Dolores and Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Dolores.
Hi. Good morning. And I have a question. We want to get a couple ornamental shrubs or trees for my mother-in-law for Christmas and her birthday. And we wouldn't be planting these till the spring, of course. But I'd like some ideas. The one that I had thought of, and I took my husband on the online tour and showed him pictures.
I love it. That's great.
Was the serviceberry, because I know you've talked about that. They have a beautiful spot because she wants a little bit of screening from the neighbors, not too much, but full sun out in the middle of the yard. It's good soil. And she'd be able to see it from her bedroom window and her kitchen window, so which was nice. But just something, any ideas you have that would be fairly low maintenance, but, you know, just and fairly, I mean, we're not going to plant an oak because she is older. You know, well, we want her to enjoy. We want her to enjoy this.
I totally get it. One of the reasons I'm such a fan of service berries is the four-season interest. You know, flowers in the spring, not as knock your socks as a crab apple, but a nice bloom in spring. Fruit that the birds love and you can eat. And, you know, if you can beat the birds to them. And I have one in front of my living room, and I'll hear this squawking in front, and I'll look out the front window and hear the birds arguing over who gets the next berry. So that's fun. And good fall color and nice silver bark for winter. Some of the crab apples, there's lots of them out there. Small fruit, good disease resistance is what you want. I have a candy mint in my small yard, and it's got light and dark pink flowers that are beautiful. Mm. No scab on it. It's kind of a spreading growth habit. A little, you know, and it screens my dining room window from, I live on a busy street, and that's wonderful. Japanese tree lilac is a nice one. Might be a little bit bigger than she's looking for, but it blooms the middle to the end of June. So it's a time that you don't see a lot flowering.
Yeah.
Smooth, shiny bark. So it's got some nice interest from that standpoint. Maybe not as colorful and flowering as others. There's a Cornelian cherry dogwood, which has yellow blooms about the time for Scythia bloom. Fruit that look like elongated cherries. They're very tart, so they're, you know, those kind of just make you pucker. But they're edible if you like to add a lot of sugar. The birds usually clean them up, okay? And they have decent fall color and beautiful peeling bark, exfoliating bark.
Oh, and she loves yellow.
Oh, and you know what?
She loves yellow. There was a fairly large spreading type tree that got killed off with some lightning.
Okay.
And she would love that.
And what you want to do is get a tree form because they can be grown either as shrubs or in a tree form. And there's a beautiful one. If you ever get up to Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee, right in front of the old garden house, there's a beautiful old specimen, nice and big and wide and spreading. Mm. And one of the other things to do might be is to take take her on the online tour, too, because I found gift certificates. Mm-hmm. Part of the fun is when you go shopping for them.
Oh, yes. Well, and her boys actually decided, you know, maybe we should do this for Mom.
Oh, nice, nice.
And that would be something that would take up a good part of Christmas Day, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, wouldn't
exactly
it be?
Right.
And I think part of the fun might be, and this might give a starting point so you're not so overwhelmed, is like all of the choices out there. But check out Cornelian Cherry Dogwood, Cornus Moss, M-A-S. In this case, the botanical name is easier than the common name, Cornus Moss.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Dolores. Appreciate your call. Melinda Myers, our guest today, author of many books, including Month by Month Gardening in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Melinda Myers, author of many books. I mentioned Month by Month Gardening, but if you want a complete list, Melinda, I bet you've got them on your website, haven't you?
You bet. That, along with monthly tips, twice a month I put on tips of what we should be doing now in our garden. I do podcasting, so I have topics. Once a week I feature a different topic and talk. Not as fun as getting to chat personally, but it's the next best thing I can do. And some videos also on gardening. So I'm trying to give some basic information that will be helpful for gardeners, whether you're experienced or new to gardening, and just a chance to tell you where I'm going to be at and also some events going on. So if you're involved in gardening, you're a master gardener, and you've got an event that's open to the public, I'll post it on my website as well.
Oh, and the website is melindamyers.com, right?
Right. Very easy to find.
And Myers is M-Y-E-R-S.
Right. And if you misspell it, you'll still get there just out of a little experience in that.
Okay. MelindaMyers.com. We'll take a look at that while we're talking with Melinda here. Mabel in St. Croix County, your turn. Hi. Mabel?
Hi there. This is one of my very, very favorite programs.
Well, thank you.
I listen every week. Well, I have a question, and thanks for mentioning the service berry. I think I'll plant one this spring.
They're great trees.
Yes, and my question is, though, a couple weeks ago, I think, you had talked about garden tools, and I was interested.
I'm looking at Larry right now.
Actually, Jim Packard was filling in for me that day.
Jim, get in here, right?
Well, anyway, you talked about a speedy weedy, and I know this has been mentioned before, and I have no idea where to get one.
And luckily for the wonderful modern technology, because I'm not familiar with the speedy weedy either. So Larry's taking
you
a
hang
look
on there. We'll
and,
get we'll
and
get it.
Doing it. But can I? So while he's checking that out, a couple of things. Garden tools are great gifts for gardeners. You know, I don't want a microwave, but give me a good gardening tool any day. And hand pruners are excellent. If you have gardeners that have bad backs and knees, there's these wonderful kneelers out there now that can be used as a seat or a kneeler. Some even have places for your tools. So, you know, if you're stumped in terms of what to get, your favorite gardening tools are good options.
And the Speedy Weedy is available at a lot of places, including it's a light, clean, fast, and easy way to remove weed roots from lawns and borders. And so you don't have to bend over. And let's see, I think you can even order it at Amazon. Might be even at Amazon.com. So,
probably get on the phone and check out the Yellow Pages. This isn't the one that uses water to knock the weeds off, is it? No.
No, there. Okay. No, this is. It's available at Amazon.com, for example, for $30, $29.95.
Okay, that's good. I need someplace I can order it because I'm not in the Madison area.
Yeah, Amazon.com is one spot. I'm sure there are many others, but that would be one place.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Janet has been waiting a while, so let's go there. Janet Namery, hello to you.
Hello, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple of questions about a poinsettia. We have some beloved ones that we've kept for a couple of years, and we must have done the right thing because it's starting to get red leaves at the top of every one of its branches.
Excellent.
And my question is, one, should I fertilize it? Since it's growing, and two, if I take it out now into light, where, of course, we have lights on and the day is longer, will it stop putting those, will those stop growing?
You know, good question. Poinsettias, just kind of a review for everybody, and pat yourself on the back, because getting them to rebloom is challenging. They like they need 14 hours of total darkness each day and regular sunlight during the day to bloom. So you don't want to put them in a dark closet for, you know, 3 months, because then they'll be dead. But 14 hours of darkness at night, regular day length, so 14 hours. Now, if they get no artificial light outdoors or indoors, you know, the reading light indoors or a street light outdoors, then putting them in an area where they get just natural light would be fine. But if, you know, if you live in the city or an urban area or you have an outdoor light, that can set it off. In fact, one grower was telling the story that he had one house of poinsettias that just wasn't turning, and he couldn't figure out what was going on. You know, they were controlling the light. They had a soda machine, and the light from the soda machine was enough to stop that part of the greenhouse from blooming. Was he a little disappointed? So that's one of the issues. Usually if it's a little cooler and you run the soil slightly drier, that will get it to bloom. You want to wait till the bracts are fully colored to quit the treatment. So if you're moving them into a dark place, bring them out in a bright area, or you have an area where they're just getting natural light, I would leave them there until either the buds, the flowers, those yellow kind of funky looking things in the middle of the colorful bracts form, or when the bracts are fully colored, then you don't need to worry about the dark treatment anymore. I would let it bloom, and then after it starts, you know, after you've enjoyed the flowers, then you might want to give it a little bit of dilute solution of a flowering houseplant fertilizer.
Okay. Okay.
But let it get into the bloom process and be flowering for a while before you fertilize.
Okay, well, thank you. And, I fed it lake water all summer long.
Oh,
so I didn't like that.
Yeah, I bet it did.
A little bit of natural fertilizer in there.
Right, right.
That's
thank you
excellent.
Very much.
Enjoy. That's wonderful.
Thank you for calling. Gail in Iola, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hi. This is a great program, and I have your book.
Oh,
however,
thanks.
I have a question.
Okay.
I had a plant that I bought this summer, last spring, at a greenhouse, and it was called a trumpet flower.
Mm-hmm.
And it had these very large, probably 5 or 6 inch trumpet-looking flowers on it with really large foliage. And then as fall came, it made little seed.
Real prickly seed pods.
Yeah. Now, does that reseed itself?
Does it reseed itself?
Yeah, and if you do a Google search or if you have a plant book, it might be listed in one of two ways. Datura, D-A-T-U-R-A, or Brugmansia, B-R-U-G-M-A-N-S-I-A. And in our area, it's an annual. The winters are too cold, and it will reseed itself. Now, this plant is very, very toxic. Some people call it death trumpet, angel's trumpet, moonflower. There are two different moonflowers. One's related to the morning glory, and some people call this moonflower as well. Very fragrant flowers. Some of them are very fragrant. Some bloom only at night. Big, wonderful leaves. Beautiful plants. And for a long time, you couldn't get them from garden catalogs. You couldn't get the seeds because they're very, very toxic. But you can either save the seeds and start them indoors. Often they'll drop seeds and start themselves, so they almost seem like they're a perennial, but they do die back. Some people grow them in containers and bring the pots indoors for winter, but boy, they can get big, and that's really a tough plant to manage. So if you left some of the seed in the ground, there's a good chance if you took the seed pods in, take the seeds out of those prickly pods, store them in an envelope or something to keep it dark in an airtight jar in the fridge for the winter. That's just to keep the temperatures consistent. You can either start them indoors, you know, in April or early May, or just start them directly outside for another plant next year. But if you want more information, Datura or Brugmansia. Some people separate them and some put them all together. So I kind of throw them on the Brugmansia class.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Gail. Thank you for calling. And you can join in, too. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. David Indresser, you are next. Hi, David.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I'd like to ask Melinda for some tips. I'm going to be putting in a brand new garden space this year.
Excellent.
It's going to be dug up into a very old established lawn in a nice, mostly sunny area. And just general ideas for soil conditioning and beginning anew.
Okay. Now, the first thing, removing the existing grass, you can do one of several things. You can get a sod cutter and remove it. If you have a lot of quack grass and perennial weeds mixed in with your lawn grass, you may want to take a little more aggressive approach, which is basically edging that bed. And you could do one of a couple things. You could use a total vegetation killer like a Roundup or Finale, and that not only kills the top but the root system. You may want to wait a couple weeks and then hit it again if new growth appears. And it depends on how you feel about chemicals. I try to use very few, but I do use Roundup or Finale when I start a bed because I feel like it's a good investment if there's quack grass in the area and bindweed to really give my plants a good head start, and it reduces the need for chemicals down the road. If it's an existing lawn, the good news is you've probably got fairly decent soil, but I would consider getting a soil test. It'll tell you exactly what your nutrients are, what you need to add, and that's a good starting point. But then I'd also plan on adding a couple of inches of compost or peat moss or other organic matter to the soil and work it into the top 6 or 8. You know, 12 would be great, but I figure I usually say 8 to 12, knowing if I get you to do 6 inches, it'll be pretty good. Because we all have good intentions when we start digging, and then we find out differently. But the organic...
I'm not entirely new to gardening.
Okay.
Just working up new spots. I had some success in the past.
Okay.
I'm in a good spot here where, as you say, the soil's about right. There's not a lot of black dirt, but it'll have nice drainage.
Oh, excellent.
But I have several yards of beautifully composted leaf and grass material from the last several years. Ready to go.
That's perfect. That's one of my favorite. And I think one of the things that, you know, we're in this big green movement right now, and I laugh and I say most gardeners have been green for years.
For a long time.
You know, and you're doing exactly that. You compost instead of throwing that away and paying the municipal, you know, your city to take and compost it. You did it yourself, and that's the best thing you can add. And I like to use that mix even as a mulch on the soil when it's partially decomposed. You know, if you have parts that aren't as decomposed, it makes a great soil.
I take
surface.
Some of the leaves occasionally and I spread them around on my mother's tomato plants.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it seems to can keep the weeds down and conserve the water during the dry times.
Sure.
Exactly, David. And I'm really, you know, I do very little fertilizing. I do a lot of organic mulching and working it into my soil. And I find, and a little bit of fertilizer is about all I need. I don't do a heavy duty fertilization. And I find organic mulches and adding organic matter to the soil really does a lot of good for your plant. So it sounds like you're right. It sounds like you are an expert gardener and you've got all the ingredients you need.
Thanks for calling, David. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Marion in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Marion.
Hello. I have a question that goes back 75 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Uh-oh. Okay, this is really going to be a tough one. Okay.
A grammar school child long, long ago, we had a teacher who tried to encourage us to use ordinary things to make plants, including seeds from foods that we had eaten.
Okay.
And I remember she made a spectacular plant from a grapefruit seed or several of them. Yesterday I ate a beautiful Texas red grapefruit with lovely white seeds, and I'm thinking, could I do that myself?
Sure. And here's one of the things. 4-H has a great, and I don't know if that bulletin exists anymore, but they had a great bulletin called Kitchen Scrap Gardens. And I always thought that was fun. And it had suggestions for starting sweet potatoes because, you know, you cut the tops off and you can grow this wonderful leafy plant. Uh-huh. Talks about oranges and grapefruits and starting those seeds. One of the things I always tell people when you're experimenting, think about where the plants are native. If they're native to a warm tropical place, then you probably don't need to give that plant a cold treatment, that seed a cold treatment. If it's native to a place where there are cold winters, that seed, you know, like for an apple, for example, the seed ripens in the fall. If it drops to the ground, it goes through a cold period before it sprouts in the spring. So I would give those things a cold treatment. Some things like nuts need a little extra special packing or ways to break down the hard seed coat. So in the case of your grapefruit, I would get a well-drained potting mix, a small container, and put it in. You might want to put several in one, or if you're thinking you're lucky, one per pot, and just keep those that sprout. Keep the soil slightly moist and warm, and you should be rewarded with some plants.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to try it.
Give
good.
You'll
have to let us know.
Give it a shot. Thank you, Marianne, for calling. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call for you to join in. Anne in Merrill, you are next. Hi, Anne.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for having the show. It's fabulous. I feel like I'm talking to a famous person because I have a few of Melinda's books that my brother's given to me every Christmas. So if I actually read them, and I do read them, but follow the directions.
Yeah,
I would be a much better gardener.
That's okay. It's just a little guidance. Every gardener knows you kind of know what you're supposed to do, but we kind of do what we want anyway. So
well,
it's okay.
Exactly. My gardening is hampered by neglect often.
Okay. Well, just notch it up to benign neglect, and then you'll be okay.
There we go. My question is regarding raising annuals. I have had the same amount of success with overwintering annuals as your neighbor did, only mine was even worse. And I was wondering about raising annuals in the home. What kind of lighting would you suggest? I've read about it online, and I came away more confused than when I started.
You know, in terms of, you're talking about taking cuttings or bringing the plants inside for winter, right?
Well, actually, no. I was thinking that I was going to not try to give the garden centers any more money, and what I was going to do is buy seeds and start things.
Okay. You know, and that's a fun thing to do. One of the challenges before you invest in lights and, you know, setting up the system is making sure that you're going to be able to deal with the watering issue. Why I don't start my own plants is I travel a lot in the spring, and I'm just gone, and I don't have anyone that I can impose on to come and check my plants regularly. I have enough to get my cats fed and the house plants cared for. So I'm deciding that's down the road in my life. But a couple of things you may want to do, and the holidays are coming, so these are great gifts. You might want to find an area in your house where you can start the plants from seeds. When you get the plants to start, you need warm conditions. Once they start growing, you need good, bright light. And most of us don't have good enough light, just natural daylight. So a shop, you know, using a shop fixture with one cool and one warm fluorescent tube, and even if you're not getting them to flower, usually two cool fluorescent tubes is good enough. And you want to put that over the plants, 4 to 6 inches above the top of the seedlings.
Okay.
So you're going to want to either have a system where you can lower the flats with the seeds in it so that the lights are not too close, or raise the lights up so they keep at about 4 to 6 inches above the plants.
Okay.
So warmth is critical for germinating. Moist soil and warmth. Once they sprout, light is critical. A good sunny window or better yet, using an artificial light. Now, if you just have a small space, there's this cool thing called an aero garden, A-E-R-O garden. And it's not for people starting a ton, but it looks like almost like a tanning booth where the top comes down with a light in it.
Okay.
And then you put the plants and they sell it. Obviously it's very pricey. So it's on my Christmas list. We'll see if anybody's reading my list. I don't think so, but it's got miniature, you can do miniature roses. You can do herbs. I was thinking it'd be fun to do herbs.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a self watering system built in as well.
Right.
I know. And they have a system for starting plants, not a ton, but if you had a small gardener, you're like, well, I really want to try, you know, maybe a dozen or so unique plants. It's called Aero Garden.
Okay.
I featured it on one of my podcasts, so I have a link from my website, or
okay.
just Google Aero Garden, and you'll eventually get there. And I know I've seen it for sale, like I think Linens and Things is the store that I know carries it. There aren't many retail places. It's mostly online. But it's one of those fun things that might give you a taste of starting plants from seed, build in a little chance of success, and avoid some of the problems.
Well, good. Well, that sounds great. Thank you so much for your advice.
You
yeah,
bet.
Thanks a lot. And what do they run, roughly?
They're like $149.
Oh.
So, yeah, so that's why I think it's not going to show up under my tree. But you know, it's for that avid gardener person that
sure.
you want to really give a taste of the greenery. The other thing I wanted to mention, when you start plants from seed, there's a lot of valuable information on the back of the seed packet. It tells you when to start it indoors if there's any special treatment needed. So always check the back of the seed packet for those specifics for that particular plant.
All righty. Thanks again, Ann, for calling. Let's go to Sudi in Milwaukee next. Hi, Sudi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. We have a golden delicious apple tree. Mm. Yes, last summer it had many apples, but all of them they had worm. What we can do about
it? It was a great insect year last year. When the weather's hot and dry, our insects do very well. Now, there are a couple of different types of worms. The codling moths and the plum curculio are those actual worms that you see.
Yes.
A good fall cleanup is a good way to start so that you don't have any debris left over. Then you need to make a decision if you're going to spray your tree or just live with the damage and, you know, cut out the bad parts and maybe make sauce and things for the ones that you can't save. Using an insecticide starting at petal fall when 90% of the blossoms have dropped off the plant and then throughout the growing season will help eliminate a lot, not all of them, but eliminate a lot of the insects. Now, some people choose to grow their own fruit so they don't have the pesticides used.
Yeah.
And some, you know, because growing apples with no insects or disease is very difficult.
Very hard.
Without using chemicals. So it's either tolerating the damage or trying it. Some people will put traps in the trees to trap. It won't control the insects. There's a lot of debate. Most people feel it doesn't control the insects, but it tells you when the adults are present laying the eggs so you know when to spray so you can minimize your pesticide. If you have access to the Internet, the University of Wisconsin Extension has a great publication on pest control for apples, and they talk about timing and products to use, and that's available free online, or if you have someone
sure.
else that can access it for you and print it off, that's a good resource too. The home orchard sprays that many gardeners buy have both an insecticide and a fungicide, and one of the downsides of that is if you're treating for scab that causes leaf drop and spots on the apples, you can't spray it until petal fall. So you're really better off using two separate products. So you're only using what you need at the right time. So check out that control option. Good cleanup in the fall. If you didn't do that before the snow fell, when it melts, get out there and clean up.
Get rid of it.
And clean up. And then, you know, if the weather may help you control some of them, otherwise, give it a little helping hand.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling, Sudi. Appreciate it. Melinda Myers, our guest today, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener, author of many gardening books. With us today, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we have one open line left at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you right on. Dave in Green Bay. We'll go to you now. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I have a Christmas cactus, and it's not blooming this year. I'm wondering what I can do.
Yeah, with Christmas cactus, there's some debate in terms of if they're photoperiodic, meaning do they need that dark treatment like poinsettias need? Some of the old literature talks about giving them 14 hours of total darkness and then regular daylight. There's also the train of thought that cooler temperatures and drier soil will stimulate bloom as well. I had a secretary when I worked for Extension who didn't have a green thumb, but she could get the Christmas cactus to bloom 3 times a year. It was in a storage closet with a good window that was cool, and she forgot to water it most of the time, so she could get it to bloom. So definitely the cool and the dry soil. So if you want to get it to bloom, you could maybe do all three. A little bit cooler conditions, keep the soil just slightly dry. That seems to trigger bloom, and then 14 hours of total darkness will just seal the deal for you.
So I could I put it in a closet? I've got a closet that's probably, it's on an outside wall, so I would say it's maybe in the 55-60 degrees maybe.
Yeah, that'd work.
Yeah, that would be perfect for it.
And how many days do you think it would take to bloom?
It's usually 2 to 3 months that it takes, so you've got to be pretty consistent.
So I'm not going to have it blooming for Christmas this
year. Maybe Valentine's Day if you're lucky, or let's see, what other holiday is, and maybe late February. So don't feel bad. I always tell people with poinsettias, if you every day you forget to give the dark treatment, delays bloom. So I've talked to many a gardener who do have poinsettias for Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Lincoln's birthday.
So Lincoln's birthday. So let's start a new trend with Christmas cactus.
Well, thanks a lot.
Good luck with that.
Otherwise it's off to the store.
That's right. You know, there's some beautiful ones out there at the garden center right now.
John in Kenosha, we turn to you now. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I actually tried 20 bushes a couple years ago.
Oh, sorry, we missed what you said there.
Okay, no problem. I tried planting a couple bushes from extra privacy near a patio in the backyard.
Okay.
I did this about 3 years ago. I believe they're...
Oh, they're what? I'm sorry?
I believe they were holly bushes.
Holly bushes.
Oh, okay.
And they never really filled in. So I'm looking for a nice plant, maybe about 4 feet tall. And I have a lot of oak trees overhanging it, so it's kind of shady. Do you have any good suggestions on when I should plant those?
How much sunlight do you think you get? Do you get 4 hours or 6 hours a day?
I'd say it's probably between 4 and 6. During the summer, the oak trees are pretty leafy.
Right. So. I'm going to give you a couple of good shade-tolerant shrubs to consider first, and then go from there. There's one that's really kind of making a comeback called snowberry, and people who, you know, have seen old Victorian houses, and my grandma had snowberries in front of her house. They have these white, look like little snowballs on the plant, and as kids, you might have popped them a little bit. They were a lot of fun to pop. There's a lot of hybridization that's been going on with them. They'll take full sun, but they're also tolerant of dry shade, and oak trees not only provide shade, but also dry shade. We talked about serviceberry before. There are shrub forms of serviceberry like the alder-leafed serviceberry and the running serviceberry that are smaller that will also take shade.
Okay.
Chokeberry is similar to, it actually looks a lot like serviceberry, but the fruit hang on through the winter and then eventually soften, and the birds will clean them up late winter or early spring, really when there's nothing better to eat out there, actually. But they have white flowers in the spring, glossy green foliage, either black. The black chokeberry tends to be smaller, and it's aronia, A-R-O-N-I-A, so that you make sure you don't get the wrong plant if you ask for chokeberry. Or the red one's a little bit taller. So those are some options that you might want to consider. And one that's hard to find is black jetbead, and that's rhodotypus, which is very shade tolerant. And if you ever get to Berner Botanical Gardens by the new garden built, by the new education center, in the back there's a huge oak, lots of hostas, and they've got a hedge of those growing alongside. Viburnums are good, but tend to get a little bit taller. Arrowwood viburnum, you can probably keep to 4 feet fairly easy. It's an upright growing plant and will tolerate some shearing. Alpine currant, but I think you can come up with something more exciting than that. But it's very shade tolerant and will tolerate shearing as well.
All right.
And what's the best time of year to start planting these? I'm obviously after the first thaw.
Right. As soon as you can get a hold of the plant, if they're dormant and they've been outside, either field grown or shipped in dormant, as soon as the ground's workable, if they're dormant, you can plant them. If they're leafed out and they're leafed out prematurely, that they've been started in a greenhouse, or you buy them bare root and they're shipped and they start to grow, then you want to wait till after frost. But if you're buying locally, the garden centers have got them outside. As long as they haven't been forced somewhere else and brought in from a warmer climate and leafed out and exposed to our cold temperatures, then as soon as you can get them, you can start planting.
All right.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You bet. Good luck with that.
Thanks, John. Bonnie in Milwaukee, it's your turn now. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, I have a crabapple tree. It's a mature crabapple tree. I love it in the spring. I hate it in the late summer, early fall. Oh, my God. It is so messy. It's so messy. Is there anything I can do for it to bloom but not to go to fruit?
Yeah, believe it or not, there is a product called Florel, F-L-O-R-E-L, and it's a growth hormone. And what they found is that Florel, by treating the tree, and you have timing's critical, because if you do it at the wrong time, you'll end up with fewer but bigger crab apples. So you won't be saying anything nice about me next fall. But I know, and you're in the... Are you in
Milwaukee?
Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Stein Garden Center carries it. And I just mentioned that because it's kind of pricey. And a lot of the professionals quit using it because timing is so critical that they found they couldn't get out for all their customers at just the right time. And so some professionals will do it. You can do it yourself, but read and follow label directions carefully. And you've got to get good coverage and you've got to do it at the right time. Directions are on the label. It works on crab apples. You know, it's labeled for cottonwoods, but can you imagine spraying a huge cottonwood?
No.
I don't think so. And so you might want to give that a try. That is one way. Otherwise, one of the suggestions I make for crab apples, some of the older ones with fruit that creates a mess or those that get apple scab and drop their leaves, is put a new one in somewhere nearby or where you can enjoy it. And as that one reaches, you know, good size that you can enjoy it, then you may want to sacrifice
the old chainsaw.
only because if you're not enjoying it, it's good to get something better in there that's serving your needs. But you might try the Florel short term and see if you can get good results.
I think I will. Every spring, I love the tree. It's so beautiful. It's so fragrant. And then in the fall, I'm ready to cut it down.
I hear you. It's that love-hate thing, and it blooms just enough to get you go, oh, maybe one more year, right?
Yeah. But thank you so much. Yeah.
You bet.
Thanks, Bonnie, for calling. Lee in Johnson Creek, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Hi. How was everything?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I've been listening to your program, and I heard them talking about a Christmas cactus.
Yes.
And a Christmas cactus will tolerate the most neglect of any plant I know, and I have many.
Yeah.
I've put poinsettias in the dark and all that, and I've gotten it to bloom. But the Christmas cactus, I just don't do anything. I put it outside. It gets a little sun and a lot of shade. And if you leave it dry out completely, if you just neglect it, and then all of a sudden you give it water, you'll have flowers. Mine blooms about 3 times a day.
A year.
Yeah.
And I brought it in the fall and gave it water after it was quite dry. It was just loaded with flowers. Then I left it go and completely neglected it. I gave it water again because I saw little buds starting. I gave it water and it's in full bloom again.
That's so great.
Anyway, like I say, you can't be afraid of that plant. Just neglect it.
And it's that
water, it'll bloom for you.
Wonderful. That whole thing of benign neglect, you know, it's just that fine line of doing it. And one of the great things about gardening, and I know, Larry, you talk to lots of gardeners, is everybody has just a little twist on how to make it happen. And you've got to find what works with your gardening style and your plants and your location. And I think that's the exciting challenge of gardening.
I had an enormous Christmas cactus in my office, and I did just about what Lee said. I never paid any attention to it at all, and once a month or so, throw some water at it. It seemed to flower all the time. It was always flowering.
And you probably irritated everybody else in the building who was working very hard and couldn't get theirs to bloom.
Oh, boy. Marcy and Holman, it's your turn next. Hi, Marcy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I moved here from Washington, the desert. And we had a plant in the yard called an ice plant. It's a succulent.
Mm-hmm.
Would it grow in this environment?
They're trying to introduce some hardy ice plants. And here's the interesting thing. Out west, it's really become an invasive plant and one that they're in some parts of the West Coast they're trying to get rid of. I have not heard of people having success. I think it's rated. The one ice plant that you're seeing is usually an 8 or 9, zone 8 or 9. There have been introducing hardy ice plants, but I have not heard of anyone having success growing them here. That was about 5 or 6 years ago that there was a push to bring them into the area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one of those, it's like pampas grass. I had one guy tell me he did get his to bloom here and survive, but I never saw it, so I'm skeptical. So, unfortunately, I think that's one of those plants you have to go out and visit, and it's, you know, a preferred location.
Well, it's kind of a long drive.
I know.
Yeah,
I hear you.
Kind of a,
maybe a good photograph.
Yeah, get a good photograph of it, Marcy.
Sorry, can't help you.
That's okay. Thank you for your help.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank
Here's
you.
The number for you to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Talking with Melinda Myers today. By the way, take a look at her website, melindamyers.com. She was talking earlier about all of the things she's got on it, and there's a lot there. Melinda and Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S.com. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and on this edition of Garden Talk, we visit with author and gardening expert Melinda Myers. Take a look at her website, by the way, at melindamyers.com, and you'll see she's got lots of great tips there. And you can find out about all of her books, and you can see some videos and do some audio. Lots there. Take a look. And if you want to talk to her personally, now's the time to do it. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Margaret in Wausau is up next, so let's go to Margaret. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Larry.
Thanks
so
for calling.
So good to talk to you both. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had some questions about an African violet. It was given to me by my grandmother last year, and she actually passed away this spring. And I've managed to keep it alive, but I would love to get it to bloom again. And I've read some things, and I guess this thing is kind of scaring me. So any ideas about how to get these guys to bloom?
Well, you know, and anytime you inherit a family heirloom or, you know, it's a special plant, it always adds a challenge to it. African violets like good bright light to flower. So you want a good sunny location, or you often see African violet growers growing under artificial light.
Yeah.
They will use plant lights, or else this is where you do need a cool and a warm fluorescent bulb to get the full spectrum to get them to bloom. So light is critical. Using an African violet or flowering houseplant fertilizer where the middle number is higher, phosphorus in the middle of the numbers, you know, it's in an artificial potting mix, and so it doesn't hold the nutrients, but you want more phosphorus to encourage bloom.
Okay.
And then slightly pot bound. What happens with house plants and flowering plants often is when they're in a container, they keep growing. But once their pots hit that, the roots hit the side of the pot, it kind of sends a signal that they're mature. And that switches them from vegetative leaf and stem production to flowering. So don't be anxious to transplant it. Keep it slightly pot bound. African violets like warm conditions. So this is one of the house plants you want in a warm spot. Yeah,
sure.
You sound like you keep your house cool too. Me too. I have an African violet kind of screaming at me right now. yours is too. Okay.
Yep.
And use room temperature water if you water from above. I like to water from above because it washes the salts, you know, any of the salts from the water or your fertilizer through the soil and out the bottom.
Sure.
A lot of people water from the bottom and let the plant, the soil, absorb the moisture so they don't damage it. Cold water on the leaves causes them to brown and die. So
they've been doing that kind of around the edges too.
Yeah.
So I was worried I'm going to kill it now. So it's like I said, a year has gone by and it's still with me.
Yay.
So just want to see those flowers. So that's great. Well, that's all very good information. Thank you so much.
You bet.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Gina in Shorewood, your turn next. Hi, Gina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a ornamental plum that I think is probably about 10 years old. When we first moved into the house, I thought the suckers were something else, so I was trying to kill them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Not prune them off, but spray them, right?
I was painting
Roundup on them?
The
okay. I can feel the pain right now. Okay.
However, We have had a landscape architect, a friend of ours, plan out our entire yard. It includes this portion of the yard, but we haven't done it yet. And I'm just wondering, with the age of the tree and what I've done to it in the past, should I just get rid of this tree before I start to landscape around it, and then it's going to die anyway?
Okay. Well, first of all, I have to tell you my bias. I'm not a real fan of ornamental plums because mm-hmm. they're short-lived. They're subject to gamosis. They sucker like you found. So if you hadn't used the Roundup, you'd be out there sawing them off. They're beautiful plants, but they don't like our heavy soil, our late spring. You know, it's just... Mm-hmm. The ornamental plums just struggle in our landscape. And I think you're asking a very good question. And as hard as it is to remove a plant that's not dead, this is a good time to say, you know,
rev
what?
Up the chainsaw.
Exactly. Look at Larry. I'm thinking, boy, you can invite him over. He's ready to cut something down. But yeah, you know, this is a good chance. And it's a good decision. You're really being very wise. If you're going to redo the landscape, it's better to replace that tree now than to dig up the whole garden that you plant around it and then have to dig up and put a new plant in. So it's a good option. It's a good time to find something that maybe will meet your needs a little better.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much.
And hopefully whoever was arguing with you on this, I agreed with you that you wanted to get rid of it, not keep it.
Oh, boy. Well, speaking of plums, I had a friend who gave me a Christmas gift this year, some plum jam that she had made. And her plums, she said they're about the size of maybe a quarter, and the nut inside is the size at least of a nickel. So she spent
That's some special jam. I'll tell you, if you're going to be taking that, I would just be composting those, I think.
Oh, but it tastes good. It really tastes good. Oh, boy. Lois and Madison, your turn. Hi, Lois. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you. I've got a question this afternoon about suggestions for a replacement shade tree. We took down a tree in our southwest corner. It's about 40 feet tall. Was an ash, and we're sort of narrowed down to looking at a tulip tree, ginkgo, or some type of a maple. Do you have any recommendations? And then we were hoping it'll really shade our house and be fairly fast growing.
Tulip trees are beautiful, maybe a little hard to find. They're kind of on their border, the northern edge of their hardiness, but beautiful and very unusual trees. You know, there's a few gorgeous ones in botanical gardens. You don't see them a lot in home landscapes, which is a wonderful reason to plant them.
Yes.
And so that would be a great choice. Moderate grower, it's not going to take off. But one of the things about fast-growing trees is the faster they grow, the quicker they die.
Yeah.
And that's why you see silver maples, Siberian elms, things that really take off and grow, don't last really long. And so that would be a fun tree. Ginkgos are always a favorite, you know, very few pest problems, you know, and sometimes giving them a little fertilizer nudge early in their life can help speed up and get them going. They're very irregular in shape, some of them. There are some that are pyramidal, like Century, that cultivars that are more upright and pyramidal, but wonderful fall color, and the leaves all drop within a couple of days, you know, like in one day. Want to get a male clone, and if you go to the nursery and they say, well, we can't tell, well, you don't want to buy it from there because that means they don't have a clue. Because the females produce fruit, which the nut is very edible apparently, but the outer shell really stinks, so you don't want to deal with that. Maples, sugar maples are great with cool, moist soil conditions. The Freeman maple is fast growing. It's a cross between a red and a silver maple. Silvery bark, good red fall color. Get an autumn blaze or one known for the fall color. Supposed to be seedless, though I've had a few people say they get a few seeds on the Freeman maple as they reach maturity. Spring planting seems to be real critical for them too with the Freeman maple. You know, there's some other maples lesser used, the Myobi maple, which is a beautiful one. There's a nice specimen at Longnecker Gardens here in Madison. You know, so those are nice choices as well. Mm-hmm. So I really haven't helped you at all, have I? Narrow it down.
Well, which is the faster growing between the tulip and the ginkgo?
You know, the ginkgo is probably going to be a little easier to find, and they're probably pretty comparable, so either one you could nudge a little bit. I really haven't seen many tulip trees for sale, so it might be a matter of availability that might help make you make that decision, but I think either of those two would be good choices.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Okay, right. Enjoy. And if you get if your tulip tree takes off and is doing well, let us know. I'd love to hear, you know, where you found it and how it does for you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Donna in West Salem. Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I have a very large Christmas cactus, and I was wondering if you could divide that, like, at the trunk and then replant those.
It can be a little challenging. They often come up pretty close to each other. If you want to start, is it too big for the pot and you don't want to move it into a bigger pot, or you just want to start
right.
a new plant?
Well, it's just huge.
It's huge. You're taking a chance because that, you know, if there are several different plants in there, but often they'll branch out from the base and you don't have much room, and I'm worried you're going to kill it. Starting new plants, you know, you probably have done this. You just make your cuttings at the sections and then let it set overnight or for a couple days to what's called suberize or callus over, and then stick them in a potting mix for cacti and succulents, and that's really all you do. You can do some pruning to help keep it, you know, size-wise above ground contained. You can do root pruning, might be an easier option. So when it outgrows the pot, take it out. Take off about an inch of roots all the way around. It's stressful on the plant, but a lot less stressful than trying to divide it. Put in fresh soil in that inch, you know, where you've pruned off the roots, and that'll buy you some more time in that container.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Donna. Peggy and Tomahawk, on to you. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just talking to another party there with the snowberry bush.
Yeah.
Right.
I've got a couple of them in my front yard here, and I have a problem with a lot of shoots coming out from that. Did I plant that? Those bushes too deep, or what's the problem there?
They're a suckering type shrub, so they make a nice mass. Are they coming out of the bed and further into the yard? Is that where you're having the problem, or you were just assuming it was going to be a single stem plant?
It comes around the whole bush.
Right, and that's their growth habit. It's one of those, so that's the way the plant grows. So it's not like a burning bush that has, you know, one or two main stems, but it's rather a suckering shrub. And that's one of the nice things about using it for barrier screening, because it does make a nice dense thicket. Also used often for bank control, erosion control on banks, because it suckers readily. So, and then one of the things with suckering shrubs is everybody wants to take the skinny little ones off, which you need to leave those and take the big fat ones off.
That's what I was doing. I didn't want them crawling all over my yard.
Well, and you know, at some point you go, okay, you can't go beyond this area, but you know, take some of the older stems off, and that encourages new growth that's going to be healthier and a little nicer looking in leaves from top to bottom. So that's the way the plant normally grows. So it's nothing you're doing wrong or did wrong. It's just, unfortunately, it sounds like the plant just wasn't quite what you were looking for.
Okay. But that's okay, because they are pretty bushes, and the berries on them, you know, they're really kind of cute.
Aren't they wonderful? So maybe try to overlook that other flaw.
Thanks, Peggy. Thanks a lot for calling. And you can join him. We've got a couple of lines open here at 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Sarah in Neshkora is next, so let's go there. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have three hibiscus plants that are quite large that I put out during the summer in sort of a semi-shade area, and then I bring them in during the winter.
Sure.
And they're quite old. I inherited them from my mother, and they're really pot-bound. And I'm wondering, it really seems to be affecting a couple of the plants, their growth. Should I repot them?
Yeah, transplanting is a good idea. I usually like to wait until the end of January or by the end of February to do my repotting or transplanting. The days are getting longer, the light intensity is a little better, the plants recover a little more quickly. You know, if you think that it's hurting them right now, then I would definitely transplant them.
Okay.
Couple things, and you may know this, but I'm going to share this for everybody listening that may not. When we transplant house plants or outdoor plants, one of the things that's key is not to go too big, make a jump too big in container size. You know, you have this plant, you go, okay, I'm going to go 4 inches bigger in diameter, and then I don't have to transplant for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the plant puts a lot of energy into putting out roots to fill that pot, more subject to root rot. You know, in the summer, it's not so much of a problem, but in the winter, indoors, it is. So, you know, by going only an inch or so bigger in diameter, you kind of help control the top growth by keeping it slightly pot-bound. You encourage bloom, because if you go too big, spends all the energy putting roots and not putting flowers out. And then you can also, if it's pot bound, the roots grow in a circle. When you move it to a larger container, loosen those roots.
Okay.
Because even if you give it more room, it's gonna those roots will continue to grow in a circle unless you loosen them or slice through them.
Okay. And another question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Should I fertilize them this time of year or not?
Only if they're actively growing.
Okay.
One of the things is a lot of times right now our hibiscus are just barely hanging on. You know, they're dropping leaves. They're not putting on a lot of growth. But if you have a good sunny window or artificial light and you're seeing signs of new growth, then you can use a very dilute solution of a flowering houseplant fertilizer. Otherwise, again, wait until, you know, February or March where you start seeing signs of growth. I mean, you can tell in your houseplants when things are better outside. They just start putting on that new growth. That's when you're going to need to do the fertilizing.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much.
You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. Colleen in Madison, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I have a question about bamboo, and I feel a little pathetic because it seems like everybody can grow bamboo inside but me.
I'm glad you're talking about inside.
Inside. And
what's that?
I'll go. He said he's glad you're talking about inside as opposed to that.
Well, I have a pet panda, and so, no, I'm
kidding. I was beginning to, we all kind of looked at each other like, what? You said that very well.
I got almost a bouquet of bamboo from a friend as a present, and she's getting aggravated with me because my bamboo is dying. It's in the same window that I have my jade plants, and I've heard all you have to do is water it, and, you know, it's in a little container with stones, and sometimes I put some fish water in there. I figure that's some fertilizer,
right.
But the leaves on it are just dying, and any suggestions?
Yeah, actually, the lucky bamboo that they sell is really a type of Dracaena. It's not the true bamboo, but it looks like one. So don't feel so bad. It's a Dracaena, so it's not like bamboo. I've talked to many people who have killed this plant, so don't feel bad, okay? So tell your friend to lighten up on you.
Okay.
It is hard to keep plants alive in a it's a really hydroponics what you're doing, and you're trying to not have it rot, because I have a lot of people call and say their leaves are yellowing and the plant's rotting. And I usually, and if the stems are soft and rotten and the roots are slimy, I usually say cut it off and then either put it back in water with the help, you know, clean things out, clean out that container, you know, rinse out the rocks, maybe a little bleach and water solution, and then rinse it just to get rid of any fungi or bacteria, and start over, or put them right in a well-drained potting mix and grow them like a house plant. They really are better off in a potting mix, a well-drained potting mix. It's a little easier. Some people, it's like, you know, I said my grandma could put anything in a glass of water and grow it for years, and some people can't. They don't like drafts of hot or cold air, so sometimes in the window in the winter it can get a little chilly, so pull it back and it might be just getting a little chilled, and then freshening up the water, so you know, maybe dump it and replenish it so that you got fresh water. The fish water is a good idea as long as there are no other chemicals, but if the fish are living, it shouldn't be a problem with the plants, so that should be no problem either. So it might just be freshening up that water a bit.
And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Chris in Madison, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Thanks for this program.
Sure.
I have a question. I'm determined to beautify an area in my backyard under some evergreens this coming year. It's just been weedy under there in the past. And I wondered if you could give me some advice about growing maybe some moss or perennials, pretty much full shade. And then I also wondered if the shade shrub you mentioned a while ago would grow under evergreens or near them, very near them.
Now, as your tree is limbed up, I take it, so you've got some space underneath them?
Yeah, there's probably 4 or 5 feet.
Oh, okay. Sometimes, a lot of times with any plant, we always think of trees that it's a light issue, and sometimes it's a moisture issue.
Yeah.
You know, it may be shade in your case, but sometimes with trees, it's as much of a competition for moisture or a lack of moisture. The dense canopy, that dense canopy of needles doesn't let the water reach the ground, and what water does, the evergreens suck it up. That's why that's the snowberry and the black jet bead rhodotypus are good because they take dry shade, which is very helpful, so you don't need to water. Or looking for perennials that will take it. Canadian ginger is a low-growing native plant that has beautiful kidney-shaped leaves, green in the summer. The flowers are right on the ground, so it's a fun one. I always say for kids, but I find even adult gardeners like to peek under and find the flowers are kind of a brown, and the beetles pollinate them, or they even think slugs might pollinate them.
Oh.
A use for slugs. A stilbe, but they like moist soil conditions. Hosta's pretty tough. Some of the Tiarella foam flowers, the Hucarella, the coral bells, lots of different choices out there. There's a wonderful plant called toad lily, Tricertus, that has blooms in the fall. It looks like little orchids. Solomon seal, the variegated Solomon seal, adds a lot of color when it's not in bloom.
Oh,
and
that's been growing wild under there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that might be another choice.
Are the mosses out of the question?
Well, mosses are good. They really like dark shade. They like moist conditions. So that's the one thing that's going to be an issue for you is keeping it moist enough. And so it's one of those that if you get it started, you're going to have to make sure it doesn't dry out. If you're not getting moss there now, it means you're going to have to work hard at getting moss to grow there.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. And Bruce from Johnsburg, Illinois. Your turn. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question concerning potting soil.
Sure.
To a local home improvement type store and bought a bag of potting soil. I had a Mingarelia about 2 feet tall. It had was starting to push the edge of how much room it was going to take in the pot, so I got a much bigger pot. I believed it was sterile potting soil, and I repotted the plant, and a month later it was totally dead. And I pulled it out to find no roots and several little grubs in there.
Yeah.
And I was pretty stunned. So how does one go about making sure that the potting soil that they're buying is really sterile?
You know, that's a really good question. And when you're the regulations are minimal on topsoil and potting soil. Whatever it says on the bag has to be true. But you know what? I could go in my backyard, dig up soil, throw it in a bag called Melinda's Potting Mix. And as long as I told you the truth about the contents, I would be within the law. So there's no real hard regulations. So you need to read the bag and make sure that it says on there sterile. What I like to do is when I used to mix all my own potting mix, and now I end up purchasing more because I'm not doing as much indoor gardening, but I look for consistency. I read the bags, and if I find a brand I like and I consistently find that one over and over again, I typically use one that a lot of professionals use, and that way it's good and consistent, and you tend to have fewer problems that way. So it's checking the bag, talking to friends who do a lot of gardening and see what brands they like, and it's very frustrating. Again, when you transplant, Mingarelias are so beautiful, not that easy to find either.
Yeah.
You know, when you transplant one pot size bigger in diameter, so you also don't run the risk of root rot as well, because that bigger pot holding more soil holds more moisture. So, it's so disturbing and so disheartening when that happens and you lose a special plant. I would even write a letter to the manufacturer, but I would definitely maybe take them off your list.
Yes.
Check the bags and talk to some of your other avid gardening friends that, you know, that may have a brand that they find is very reliable.
And thank you very much for calling. And Melinda, always a pleasure.
Great talking with you and all your listeners too. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you very much. And take a look at Melinda's website, melindamyers.com, and you will find out a whole lot more from her, but just not over the phone. I will be in Paris, France next week. I'm doing some work for UNESCO, and so I'm looking forward to that. I'll be back, though, the week after. In the meantime, Jim Packard will be filling in for me. And you'll be talking with Mike Hoffer on Monday of Hoffer's Tropical Plants in Milwaukee about exotic animal pets. And then he will talk with nationally known food writer Jim Fraioli about Italian cuisine. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.